Blog Talk Radio.
That you could be with us tonight. You can find out more information on the articles I write and on the shows that we have. You'll find a lot of very interesting archives at my website, SusanKnoll.com. I hope you go there and we'll check it out. There's been a lot of information in the news today. As you know, Ted Cruz announced his candidacy for the president 2016. And as you also probably know, there have been already a lot of naysayers, a lot of, haters out there already. He just announced that he was going to be a candidate. He didn't get the nomination. But we've already started with the fact that, he's not a legitimate president because he wasn't born here. I think for those who know the law, they know very well that according to the Constitution, that if you are born to a parent who is an American citizen, then you are a natural born citizen or under the laws of the Constitution, and you have every right to run for president. So we'll see how that goes. We don't have to get all worried yet. We're at the very beginning. We should just be happy that he announced he's pretty much a very much a constitutionalist, and I'm glad the fact that he stepped forward. Whether he gets a nomination or not is yet to be seen. But for now, I'm happy that somebody, has stepped forward that seems to be a viable candidate. If you have any questions for our guest tonight, you can call in at 347-205-9620. Or you can just type the question in the chat room. The chat room is open. And I'll go ahead and ask our guest the question. So let's get started. We have a lot to talk about tonight and a short time to talk about it. Our guest tonight is Scott Bennett. He's a U.S. Army Special Operations Officer, the 11th Psychological Operations Battalion, Civilian Affairs Psychological Operations Command, and a Global Psychological Warfare Counterterrorism Analyst, formerly with the defense contractor Booz Allen Hamilton. He received a direct commission as an officer, held a top secret sensitive compartmentalized information security clearance, and worked in the highest levels of international counterterrorism in Washington, D.C., and MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa, Florida. He has worked at U.S. Special Operations Command, U.S. Central Command, the State Department Coordinator for Counterterrorism, and other government agencies. He served in the George W. Bush administration from 2003 to 2008 and was a social science research fellow at the Heritage Foundation. His writings and lectures seek to enhance global awareness and understanding of modern psychological warfare and the intelligence and in international intelligence. He has written extensively on the intelligence community's surveillance activities addressed by Edward Snowden's National Security Agency, CIA materials, and since 2010 has filed numerous military government whistleblowing reports with congressional committees. And we're going to be talking tonight about some of those and about why he, in fact, did file those reports and who he filed them against. So let's go ahead now and welcome to the show, Scott Bennett. How are you, Scott?
Hi, Susan. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Great. And if you could speak up just a little bit, I could hear you a little bit better, that would be great. I have a lot of questions that I want to ask you tonight. And
sure.
I know that there's been a lot of things that have been happening to you personally because of the whistleblowing that you've done. So I kind of want to go down the list and spend a lot of time here. I have a series of questions I want to ask you because I want to lay the foundation and make sure that the audience understands exactly what everything is about. So I want to get started sort of at the very, very beginning and ask you, you know, as a civilian, what were you doing before you went in to the Army?
Well, before I went into the Army and received a direct commission as an officer, I was with Booz Allen Hamilton as a counterterrorism psychological warfare analyst. I had been brought in under Colonel Jeff Jones, who was starting a team to develop strategic communications and information operations and psychological warfare platforms to utilize and project into our combatant command theaters of operation, Iraq, all of Central Command's area of operation. So I had joined Booz Allen Hamilton based on my understanding of Islamic theory and Islamic counterterrorism, and had then been given a direct commission into the Army. Before that, I was in the Bush administration from 2003 to 2008, and that was what launched me. You know, from 2001 to 2008, I was in the president's, you know, the conservative camp, supposedly fighting the terrorist organizations and the terrorist operations throughout the Middle East.
Now, when you were working for Booz Allen, why didn't you just stay a civilian? Why was it that they felt, or whoever felt, made that decision that you should be commissioned as an officer in the Army? How did that come about?
Well, the people who I was working with at Booz Allen Hamilton were seasoned warriors in the information operations field. Colonel Jeff Jones was previously the 4th Psychological Operations Group commander. He was renowned as the father of psychological warfare. He had served everywhere in Bosnia and Kosovo and Desert Storm 1. He had been on the National Security Council, and he was recognized as one of the leaders in information warfare. And he was looking to start a team that was a little bit unorthodox, that was asymmetric, that was thinking outside the loop. And he had seen me in a presentation that I had given to General Myers and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld when I was at the Pentagon. And he said, I want you on my team. I think you've got a lot to offer that the military doesn't have. And, in fact, they need to have it if we're really going to get serious in the Middle East wars. So I came into the Army as more of a consultant contractor looking to fix the problems they had, the errors they were operating under, the skills that they were lacking. I came to basically impregnate the Army with things that it absolutely needed in order to win the war and finish the job. What I ran into was just a junkyard of bureaucracy, stupidity, lack of imagination, and bureaucracy that makes the federal government pale in comparison. The military is far, far worse because probably about 80% of the military officers over the rank of major all operate under, you know, a professional agenda rather than a national security agenda, which most Americans really don't know, and they haven't taken the time to analyze it unless you've served in uniform. And those who, you know, listen to your show and are familiar with you will, you know, who've worn the uniform will be very familiar with what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us, you know, for those who don't know exactly who Booz Allen Hamilton is, tell us who they are and what kind of their role is with the military.
Well, Booz Allen Hamilton is one of the largest contractors in America. It's a intelligence, military, federal government contractor, was previously under the Carlyle Group, that does everything under the sun in military contracts. And usually it hires people who come out of the military with security clearances and puts them into teams doing contracts based on what they were doing in the military. So there's a lot of incestuous relationships. People come out of the military and go right into defense contracting. And the ironic thing is when they join the defense contracting team at Booz Allen Hamilton, they are told really in no uncertain terms, you know, we want to keep this contract going as long as humanly possible. We want to, you know, develop it and expand it. And in warfare terms, you're basically saying we don't want the war to end. We want to continue to develop it, to expand it, to keep it going so that we all have jobs. And I found that morally conflict and constitutionally, I mean, obscene and a violation of everything that American taxpayers pay the military and the federal government and their contractors to do. And that was, you know, a moral instinct that I always had. And when I started making that known, and presenting the military and Booz Allen Hamilton with theories and projects and roadmaps for ultimately, you know, winning the war, winning the hearts and minds within the psychological warfare battle space, that was when I began to be, you know, identified, kicked back, pushed back, and then ultimately I was roped into a false civilian charge and thrown into a federal prison for a couple of years because I was being pretty effective.
Yeah, and before we go there, I want to point out two things. One, you received a direct commission without going through officer training, and that's pretty rare. I mean, is that correct? Is that what they did for you?
Well, I went through all the training. I went through officer training school and infantry school and jump training at Fort Benning, Georgia, and a variety of other places, some of which are classified. But I was given a direct commission, and they only give direct commissions to basically lawyers and doctors, people of advanced professional degrees. I had been given one because my knowledge and experience in developing counterterrorism theory. My background had been in advertising. I'd done a lot of writing. I had a lot of interagency experience with the Bush administration. So I had a lot of things, a lot of colors on my palette that the powers that be supposedly wanted to take advantage of in painting their own portrait of war. So I was given the direct commission. However, I was still forced to go through all the training, and it was pretty intense. But
right.
After which, you know, I immediately jumped into the military command centers. And I was at the State Department. I was liaison officer in the counterterrorism office. I was at Special Operations Command. I was at U.S. Central Command. I was at the highest levels of counterterrorism that anyone could be at. And I saw a lot. I never discuss anything that's top secret or classified, but a lot of the material that I saw and started working on really didn't come to full understanding until much later, including 9/11.
And it also, when you said that, you know, this is what they were doing to keep the jobs available, you know, for that people getting out of the military. This was what Booz Allen Hamilton was doing, and the military and the federal government, I just want to, you know, kind of make that clear, they were all aware that that's what the goal was and everybody was doing, correct?
Well, it certainly seems when you judge people in agencies and military teams by their actions, not what they say
uh-huh.
and what they want, but what their actions are actually doing, then you
right.
can't help but walk away and say your actions are doing the opposite of winning the war. Your actions, instead of winning people to our side, winning the Muslim personality, dividing the radicals from the moderates, you're doing the opposite. You're driving every Muslim on planet Earth into the radical jihadist camp. You're inflaming the moderate countries with radicalism, and you're purging every Christian from the Middle East and area of operation in Africa and in Syria and Iraq and Egypt and Libya. So your actions are doing the opposite of what you're saying you're doing. And that was
right.
the consistent encounter that I had every step of the way in the military and in the intelligence agencies. They were doing the opposite of what they should have been doing. And it was very bizarre to me. It was very mysterious. It was almost like a Twilight Zone episode. I couldn't quite understand, and I kept trying to think, are these people just stupid? Are they
uh-huh.
inept? Are they incompetent? Are they so addicted to their way of doing things that they can't understand the nuances and the complexities and the sensitivities and the organic nature of the human mind and behavioral patterns? Are they that dull? And I kept trying to fix that and trying to formulate it and trying to figure it out. And I kept being, every time I would engage them, I ran up against a lot of sort of depression and pessimism and military guys who were just, you know, they're like a bunch of old men who had been castrated and they had no motivation, no energy, no optimism, no hope. They were just like, you know, 1984 behind a desk cranking out papers, and there was nothing there. And I kept saying, my God, you don't realize you're on a stopwatch, that there's only a limited amount of time before the war and the enemy gets so strong that we're so weak, we can't produce anymore. We've got a schizophrenic population that aren't any good to be in a military role. And you've got an enemy now where 75% of the Muslim population despise and hate and distrust the United States of America. That's very disconcerting to me, because I come from the Ronald Reagan generation, the Ronald Reagan era. And we didn't have any of the hostility and the violence that we have now. Reagan preached to the world a glorious message of light and goodness and justice and honor and entrepreneurial and being able to carve out of the world your own success. Now it's falling into a police state of schizophrenic, hysterical fearing of terrorism around every corner, and the only savior is the federal government. Not even mentioning the police state that is starting to restrict and confiscate all of our constitutional rights.
Absolutely. And when you saw all of this, what did you do? I mean, did you just keep noticing this, you know, in every, like you said, in every turn. Did you then go to somebody and start talking about this? Did you start filing paperwork? What did you do?
Well, that was what set me apart, and I don't say any of this with pride or gleefulness or any sort of ostentatiousness. I went into the Bush administration to fix problems and serve and advance what I believe was an important conservative agenda for America's domestic policy. And then 9/11, all that stuff happened. And of course, I bought into the Kool-Aid. I drank the Kool-Aid, and I bought into the lie that 9/11 was a bunch of Muslim savages on an airplane that crashed into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, and miraculously, the World Trade Center fell at free fall speed, and the Pentagon, the Washington, D.C., the most guarded area in the country, was hit, and it was Muslim terrorists that did it. Well, I bought into the idea because no one distrusts the government. No one distrusts what you're being told, so you follow along. It wasn't until years later when I started really analyzing this and looking into it and measuring it that I discovered it was all fabricated. It was all a lie. And that's a dawn that's beginning to approach on the American military personality. They are starting to really wake up to that. But not to go down a rabbit trail, what I always was doing was filing reports. When I was at the State Department, I filed multiple reports and analytical papers, white papers. I did the same thing at Special Operations Command. I did the same thing when Dov Zakheim, that's a little bit of a trail, but we should explore that. Dov Zakheim was my boss at Booz Allen Hamilton running the counterterrorist finance operations. Dov Zakheim was also the Pentagon comptroller, where $2.3 trillion, which Susan Lindauer and other people have now analyzed to be more like $16 trillion, was stolen and sent off in various funnels and spending operations that just disappeared. Well, Dov Zakheim was the comptroller in charge of that. He then went to Booz Allen Hamilton. And after I finished up with my operations in Special Operations Command and the State Department and had went through the military training, Dov Zakheim hired me to come down to U.S. Central Command in Florida to basically follow the money, find out where the terrorist bank accounts and their money was stored, how they were using it, where they were sending it, and how to stop them. So I had to pick up my life and move down to Florida. It was a challenge, but I did it. I did it not out of money. I did it not out of personal, professional ambition, but I did it to serve my country. I did it because I thought it was a job I could do better than anybody else, and I had a duty to step up and perform. So I went down as almost a consultant mind, you know, like a doctor when he analyzes the human body with an infection. He basically goes and prods and probes and explores and finds out where the infection is. Where's the weakness? Where's the difficulty? Where's the problem? Where's the broken bones? And I went down with that attitude, and I started poking and prodding and exploring and finding all sorts of funny business that was going on. And I began filing reports like, well, this is problematic. This is stupid. This is wrong. We need to do this. We need to do that. We need to change this. And I won't go into any of the details because a lot of it's classified. But when I started making reports and filing paperwork and documentation, the next thing I know is I'm stopped at the front gate. I'm arrested. I'm put in handcuffs. I'm put into an interrogation cell. I go through the 8 hours of interrogation, which, by the way, I thought was a military test. I thought it was a military examination to determine if I was prepared for deployment. So I thought it was part of an operation. I honestly thought, there's no way this can be real. I must be tested. This must be part of, you know, the whole game. And little did I know, that was all a setup, because when they put me through that gauntlet, they then said, now we're based on some silly paperwork errors. They said, because your paperwork is not in order, because we haven't got this and that, we're barring you from base. And that was it. And then I was barred from base, and Booz Allen Hamilton fired me the next day. And I then knew that something was up, something was afoot, that my reports and my specific addresses of European banks and Iranian banks and Swiss banks and Africa operations were rubbing against people the wrong way. And I didn't quite know who at the time, but I knew Dove Zakheim was the key principal. And I didn't discover till much, much later just how corrupt the whole team was that I had been working for.
And do you think they sent you down to Florida? I mean, were you getting too close to finding out what they were doing? So they send you down to Florida, maybe set you up so that you can't find out, you know, what's going on, and that way they can fire you, get you off the base, get you removed from the company, and then whatever access that you had to the information is gone. Do you think that
would
happen to you?
I think when Colonel Jones, my original mentor, who was of a different school, he was more of the white hat. He was more of the, he knew the wars were all lies and he knew everything had been fabricated, but he was sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place. And there are some speculation that they eliminated him. He had been given brain cancer and had died in 2010, but he knew, sending me down, the kind of guy I was and my work and my instincts. No one else down in Florida knew me. No one knew who I was. No one knew what I had done. They had supposedly said, Colonel Jones, we'd like to, you know, have a guy. And he said, Scott Bennett's your man. They didn't ask questions. They didn't really vet me. So they didn't know that I wasn't going to play ball with the corrupt side. And when I got under the tent, that's when it started being sort of like a Tasmanian devil in the circus tent. I started finding all sorts of issues and problems and documenting them and reporting them and providing military commanders with insight and feedback, exposing some of the interagency failures, exposing the failure of the Department of Justice, of Treasury, of CIA, of DIA, all these agencies that were supposed to be working on terrorist finance issues and were failing miserably. And one of the biggest things were Swiss banks. And it didn't come out till much later, till I met the Swiss banker himself in the most wild, weird adventure you could imagine. When I met him and saw the bank accounts, I knew that he was a different part of the puzzle, but he was the one I was looking for all along.
Now,
and it was basically all the Swiss banks that are used in funding terrorism.
And I was going to ask you, you know, do you think that the CIA and with funneling money through the Swiss banks to finance ISIS and
Al-Qaeda? I know for a fact they were. I've seen the accounts and the account holders and the account numbers.
And the person that you met, Brad Birkenfeld, that you met
Yes.
when you were in jail. Now, can you tell us, and I did some research, and I know if the answer to this, but I'll ask it. Do you know what his background was, why he was sitting in jail, what the charges were against him?
Oh, yeah. Well, I had 6 months to debrief Brad Birkenfeld and examine every facet of his case and his intelligence material. So I know his entire story as well as I know my own. And Brad Birkenfeld was a Swiss banker. He had worked in a variety of Swiss banks, Credit Suisse, Union Bank of Switzerland, and he had exposed strange money laundering and bank tax evasion and terrorist financing connections within the Swiss banking industry. And he had been approached by the Central Intelligence Agency to be an asset for economic espionage. He didn't know it at the time, but they had got him into a DUI, and a CIA agent had went into his jail cell and got him out and said, now we want to use you. And Brad basically, and the funny thing is, Edward Snowden was the CIA analyst in Geneva at the time they did this to Brad Birkenfeld. And Snowden has reported this to Glenn Greenwald, The Intercept. He just gave a report in Germany, I think it was, in which he reiterates this again. So it's fascinating that all these pieces of the puzzle are starting to come together. But Snowden was in Switzerland, Geneva, when Brad was targeted by the CIA, and that's yet to really come out. No one in the media has covered this. No one's reported it. And Greenwald has only touched upon it, despite being contacted about the depth of it. He's refused to expand upon it or report it. Neither has Snowden's attorney, Jeffrey Raddick, who also represented Brad Birkenfeld. So there's a lot of funny cover-ups and definitely, I'd say, conspiracies in this, because no one is exploiting that. But Brad came over to the Department of Justice after the CIA had approached him, and he basically dumped his entire backpack of bank accounts and bankers and cell phones and everything that you could imagine that we could have used to track down finances that belong to terrorists, tax evaders, money launderers. And the Department of Justice, headed by Lanny Breuer and Eric Holder, basically worked with Hillary Clinton at the State Department to prosecute Birkenfeld, largely because Eric Holder and Lanny Breuer worked for the law firm named Covington and Burling that represented Union Bank of Switzerland. So here are these two guys in the highest levels of the Department of Justice, the Attorney General and one of his assistant Attorney Generals, and they cover up that they work for the law firm that represented UBS, and instead they give UBS a deferred agreement, a slap on the wrist, and throw the banker himself in prison. And wow. The other people who are to blame with that are Carl Levin. And Barack Obama was a senator on the Senate Permanent Investigations Committee when Birkenfeld gave this testimony. A lot of this material, you know, I've written up on my website so people can see it, and you can mention that when you're ready. But there's a vast paper trail. There's a vast story of how this all came together. And it was basically Birkenfeld fleeing Europe, coming to the United States, and then being stabbed in the back and prosecuted and thrown in prison, where he was stuck. He had to do all these appeals. He was trying to get out. It was like he was in a pit. And when I was basically thrown in prison on these crazy charges, the first time in the history of the United States they've ever gotten away with charging a military officer with these military issues, military charges, and prosecuted them in a civilian court. It's basically like saying you were driving a tank, and we're gonna charge you with violating driving a tank. And you say, right. Well, wait a minute, I'm driving a tank because I'm a military officer and I'm following orders. And that's what they did to me. No, you're not supposed to be driving a tank. We're gonna charge you with a civilian law. And that's why these things were so crazy at the time. I thought, this has got to be a test. And
right.
There's other
seems
things
like too
related
much of a
to
joke.
My. It was a crazy joke. I mean, they even, the CIA had stepped in and tried to say through their Wackenhut security guard, and all of this is still an appeal. All of this is coming out just now. It's taken 2 years to get this out, but it's coming out like Niagara Falls has suddenly been thawed and the water is rushing through. But the CIA had tried to say I dressed up in a police uniform in order to make the judge, buy into the argument that, I wasn't a real military officer. It was complete lies. But to make a long story short, they sent me to the same prison that Brad Birkenfeld was at in Pennsylvania. And that's where he and I met. We couldn't believe it. We thought it was, for the moment, you know, is this a setup or is this an accident or what? I'm under the impression, you know, that it was more of a miraculous hand of God bringing us together haphazardly, because I know no one in the intelligence community is smart enough to really figure that out and how to do it. But I found myself in the same prison with Birkenfeld, and when I saw all of his bank accounts and all of his material, I thought, you know, this is the way that God uses the foolish things to confound the wise. Here I am, thrown into a federal prison on a paperwork error that's ridiculous, and here is where I find the Swiss banker that has all of the financial intelligence that we need in the military to stop the terrorists from killing our guys in uniform, to win a lot of these battles in the Middle East that we now see with ISIS and ISIL and all that nonsense. So this was 2012, and 2012 is when Brad and I started writing letters and reports up the chain of command in the military, in the Congress. I wrote to over 150 congressmen and senators, and you know what, Susan? The only person to respond was Rand Paul. He is the only person in Congress to have responded to me. And I'm talking about writing letters to Dianne Feinstein, Mike Rogers, Mike McCall, Pat Leahy, all the people on the intelligence committees, the armed services committees, Howard Buck McKeon, John McCain, who incidentally had flown with my dad in Vietnam. My dad was a Marine Corps fighter pilot. All of these people, and I had been in the Bush administration. If there's anybody who deserves a debriefing, it's a guy who served in the Bush administration, was a military officer, was still a military officer, had a top secret clearance, was in the State Department, was in Special Operations Command, was in Central Command. You would think if there's one person that would deserve some sort of a debriefing, it was me. No one, not a single human being in the military or the Congress ever contacted me. The only interesting incident was Michael Isikoff of NBC News and Tom Hamburger of The Washington Post had come up to interview me thinking that I was a rogue Booz Allen Hamilton contractor, and they were trying to do a story on security clearances. Well, when they walked in the door and met me, I sat down for 2 hours and told them this story that I'm telling you and gave them everything in documentation form. And they never contacted me again, and they never wrote a single thing about this, and they never returned my documentation. Of course, I have copies, but that tells you the level of fear and cowardice or corruption or both that exists in the military and the Congress and in the media today. That's why I applaud people like you who have the guts and the courage and the patriotism to take this subject and talk about it. And I welcome every call, every question that anyone may want to pose that's listening to you. So that's why I'm doing this. It's not for me. It's not for, professional enrichment or anything like this. I am performing and fulfilling my duty as a military officer to make this known, because I guarantee every mom and dad who's lost a son or a daughter in this war is going to be sickened and infuriated and will break down the doors of their congressmen demanding an answer. Why didn't you answer Bennett? Why didn't you act on his report? My son is dead because of you. My daughter has lost her legs and her arms. My nephew is in a bed as a vegetable because he was blown up by a bomb. He was blown up by an IED that was purchased from a Swiss financier bank in relation to Qatar or Kuwait or Saudi Arabia, and all this money could have been stopped, but it never was because you didn't act on it. They've got blood on their hands, Susan.
Well, and it is interesting, and there's always a connection, it seems, to Hillary and the DOJ and Barack Obama and a lot of things that we hear, for this being the most transparent government. I think that's just, absolutely a joke, and we all know that. It's a matter of being able to prove everything that is keeping all this, from coming out. And while we're on the subject, go ahead and tell people your website so that they will know where to go and how to contact you.
Well, every document, every letter, every report that was ever sent to the military and the Congress and the media, I have documented and put up online and in a book called Shell Game, You can Google it, and you'll find it, Shell Game by Scott Bennett. And it's also on the website, which is www.armypsyop, that's spelled ARMYPSYOP, .wix.com/Scott Bennett. So you can Google Shell Game, and it'll bring it up, and you can click on it. But all the letters, all the exhibits, all the reports, everything's up there, and people can read it, and it's you can print it out in PDF form, or you can get it in bound copy, and you'll see everything for the last, since 2012, what was sent up the congressional and military chain of command. And every American should be sickened by the fact that not one congressman or one senator ever responded. In fact, they tried to cover it up. They tried to bury me, thinking I was going to give up. But, of course, I never did, because I looked at this like I have a duty to every single soldier, airman, Marine, and sailor who is being put in harm's way because they're being shot at by weaponry that we are allowing to be funded. Now, it doesn't mean the Swiss bank issue stops every dollar going into the bad guys' palms, but it certainly could account for stopping 75% of it, because that's where 75% of the financial donations come. They're watered down and laundered by Middle East regimes that send them through European and Swiss banks, and they come down the other side.
Well, and I think it's interesting also, you know, when I was looking some things up on Birkenfeld, that, you know, from the very beginning, they did not want to grant him immunity and did not grant him immunity, you know, to testify. And, you know, it kind of makes sense with what you're saying, you know, why it would occur. And then he later pled guilty to a single count of conspiracy to defraud the United States. And he was given a sentence of 40 months plus 3 years parole. And, you know, the DOJ, according to what I read, was they kept saying, well, we're not part of the IRS whistleblower status, so we're not going to give you any money for revealing what had happened and the money connection. And basically the whole thing, the whole premise was that there was money that the United States was funneling through the Swiss bank account to evade paying taxes in the United States. As it turned out, because they would not have been able to make a case without him, they did pay him what he was due, which was $104 million under the whistleblower law. And I think it's interesting to note that, and I don't think this is unusual, but it's interesting to note that because he's under parole, you know, he cannot leave the United States until that's lifted. And I believe that's in 2016, I think, when it's over. I'm not sure. But I also know that he's been contacted and subpoenaed by France, it said, in 2015, to testify regarding now French citizens and how they may have evaded taxes through the Swiss bank. So it seems like it's ongoing with him.
Well, let me say, he was fighting tooth and nail to get this material out, and his lawyers who cut – basically, you know, I learned so much about the law from good men that I met in prison. The best men on the face of this country I've met in prison. Brilliant men, great thinkers, very moral. I'm talking about doctors and lawyers and military officers who were railroaded, and they were put into this prison camp where the white-collar guys are. The stories are absolutely astounding. You couldn't believe it. No one knows the corruption that the Department of Justice wields and how it abuses people. But Brad was paid because of the reports and the exposure of this to the military commands and the Congress. That's why they paid him, because we let the cat out of the bag. Finally, Brad had me next to him, and I confirmed everything that he was talking about, and they knew it. They knew now there's two of them. There's Bennett and there's Birkenfeld. Let's buy off Birkenfeld. And that's what they did. They paid him $104 million. Incidentally, they did it on September 11th, 2012. Now, anyone with an intelligence military background understands they coordinate subversive actions like that on specific days. So they did that
right.
intentionally so that Brad's payment was shadowed by the Benghazi uprising, and that is now being looked at by Congress. Incidentally, I wrote all these members of Congress and told them Brad Birkenfeld was paid $104 million for all this terrorist financing account, which occurred on the same day as Benghazi. You need to investigate this because you'll find out that these SEALs were killed in Benghazi as part of this cover-up of Birkenfeld's payment. So they've had all of this material, and not one congressman or senator has ever investigated this. So they're trying to bury it, but it's not going away. It's still coming out.
So you had also had, I guess, Mark, was it Mark Hastings, the reporter that was working
Michael
on
Hastings,
some of these things?
Yeah.
Michael Hastings.
Michael,
tell
yeah,
us
Michael Hastings.
That.
Michael Hastings had contacted me about some of these issues, and I'd sent him materials and reports and letters, and he was examining it. He was the only journalist who had any guts or gumption to really dig into this and start connecting the dots. And lo and behold, when he started making the connections of the psychological warfare connections to McChrystal, who was closely tied with members of my team at Booz Allen Hamilton, and Hastings knew of McChrystal from a previous report he had done when he was analyzing PSYOP officers and how we were crafting communications designed to influence senators, which is a violation of the Smith-Month Act, by the way. That's why a lot of the officers refused to do it. But we were being ordered to influence political leaders in order to free up the purse strings and fund our psychological warfare operations. Because Hastings knew that, and he was connecting the dots between McChrystal and psychological warfare and the State Department and Brad Birkenfeld and myself and Booz Allen Hamilton, the next thing you know, his car explodes in a thermite charge and he disappears. But his work has not disappeared, and the materials are forthcoming. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
I've documented that, too, in the book materials, the communication with Hastings.
And so where does this leave you now? What is about to occur with this whole lawsuit and legal proceedings and all that's going on? What's going to happen with that?
Well, for the first time in the history of the United States, a military officer is going to step into a Florida federal court and tell the judge, Your Honor, you've been lied to and duped, and the federal Department of Justice has committed fraud upon the court. They have lied in so many ways, vocabulary escapes me. We'll have to sit down for 3 hours and piece this whole puzzle together. But it's a puzzle that paints a picture of corruption and ugliness and murder and political abuse like you couldn't invent, you couldn't make up. And the judge and the court and the public will finally see what they should have saw in 2011, but they didn't, because the lawyers and the Justice Department and everybody played fast and loose with the truth and the process and threw me in jail before any of this could come out. Despite my numerous requests for the military to step in, my request for the military council for motions to proceed, to inform on national security matters, all of that was covered up. I was basically sent to the island like Tom Hanks in Castaway, and I was left there and nobody responded. So now it's taken 2 years. But now this is all going back into the court to say this entire charge was false. It should be reexamined. In addition to the racketeering and RICO and the conspiracy between the Department of Justice in putting this false case together, this now new evidence has been discovered. Newly discovered evidence has come to light, which indicates Dov Zakheim, Booz Allen Hamilton, and various parties within the Department of Justice and the Pentagon have contributed to the fraud on the court. And the reason that I was targeted was because of the work I was doing in counterterrorism threat finance, which wasn't proven until much later when I met the Swiss banker, Brad Birkenfeld, and he confirmed all of my reports and work with his own story. So all of those people will be subpoenaed and brought back into court and forced to answer questions. So that's a very significant thing. It's the first time it's ever happened in the country. There's a lot of interesting parallels to 9/11, to the 9/11 analysis of Dov Zakheim and the Pentagon comptrollers and the area of the Pentagon that was blown up, specifically naval auditors who were looking at the $2.3 trillion. Dov Zakheim was that comptroller, so he will be forced to come in and answer questions about things that relate to both my work and his work at the Pentagon. And that's not happened since 2001. That's not happened, but it will.
Well, we have about 8 minutes or so left. I want to talk a little bit about the accusations that you have in regards to 9/11. I know that, different people believe, different things, but what is it that specifically that you're saying about the connection with 9/11 and what actually happened at 9/11?
Well, I never was a 9/11 conspiracy theorist guy. I never looked into it. I never bothered with it. I thought it was all made up. I thought, well, it's a bunch of crazies who are just pissed off at the country and they're trying to make all sorts of nonsense. And that was my position for a long time until I started being educated and informed of the facts. And it's not me. It's the scientists, the engineers, the architects, the experts who've analyzed everything about the events. And when you look at all of the evidence, a reasonable person cannot help but walking away saying the official story that we've been told is a lie, is a complete fantasy, because the physical laws of nature make it impossible to have occurred what they said occurred. So when you walk away with, all right, the official story is a lie, then you're left with, well, what is the alternative story? And you begin to put together what actually happened. And you just have to do your homework. You have to read up on it. Now, my connection to it, of course, is through Booz Allen Hamilton, Dov Zakheim, and the counterterrorism, the threat finance, following the money side. So it's about Dov Zakheim, the money games, and MacDill Air Force Base and a lot of the shenanigans that were going on. That's where I'm connected, but it will be brought forth in a court of law for it to be fully exploited.
And what is it specifically? I know I've heard you mention in other areas about Building 7 and what happened there.
Well, as all the experts who've studied it and reported on it, Building 7 was a controlled demolition, and it was detonated and destroyed and fell at free fall speed because of the documentation that it contained. And the documentation within it was intelligence material relating to money and finances and black budget operations by the CIA and various government agencies, all of which, if you Google it and do the YouTube studies, you see the list of the companies that were there, and if you really want to be adventurous, you can find the actual leases and the documents and the listing of all the companies that were in Building 7. But that building came down, and it's clearly reported in the video footage from the British Broadcasting Corporation. The BBC reporter is about 5 or 20 minutes ahead of herself when they're reporting that the building collapsed, when it, in fact, had not yet collapsed. So I'm not an expert in the 9/11 issues. I leave that more up to Barbara Honegger and Susan Lindauer and, Gage of Architects and Engineers and a lot of very professional, reasonable, intelligent people who have studied this since 2001. And I've only studied it since 2011. But I'm sort of the quintessential military guy who when you suddenly begin to put it all together, it makes perfect sense. And you're outraged. You're infuriated. You're sickened by it because you soon see that your government and international parties, including Mossad, the intelligence agencies of Israel, and the U.S. CIA and some of the high-level Pentagon brass have bombed our own Pentagon. They put bombs inside the Pentagon. They put bombs inside the World Trade Center to detonate it. And men were killed because of those, not because of airplanes, but because of bombs that were put inside American buildings. And soon, all of that is going to be, I think, it's going to snowball into a demand for a congressional and public investigation. This is, it's the equivalent of being told on December 8th, 1941, that, you know, all these Japanese pilots bombed Pearl Harbor. But 10 years later, you discover that all those Japanese pilots were really CIA operatives, and they weren't Japanese at all. That's the equivalent of what we're now discovering, is everything we were told that happened on America's Pearl Harbor was a complete lie. It was engineered and orchestrated and planned by the highest levels of the American government, specifically Dick Cheney, Dov Zakheim, Donald Rumsfeld, Michael Chertoff, Pearl, Wolfowitz. All of these guys with dual Israeli citizenship, by the way, were part of this Project for New American Century. And we need a Pearl Harbor to unite the country against Muslim radicalism. And that was all a lie. That wasn't the case at all. And it's starting to come up. But the real beneficiary was Israel and Mossad, because basically all the countries that they didn't like have been torn down or weakened and turned into chaos. You just look at the international map of the Middle East. The blowback is going to be a little bit more dangerous, because now you've got a bunch of ISIS and savage barbarians who are, you know, the genie's out of the bottle.
Wow. It seems like there's, you know, so much with all of that. And, of course, we can't cover that in 5 minutes, but you know, maybe it's something we'll have to have you back and the other guests that you talked about, the other people, maybe we can have them on as guests too and kind of explore this a little bit further. I do, you know, want to thank you for coming on tonight and telling us all the information that you have and all that's been going on in your life in regard to, you know, what's happened to you once that you did file information. And, you know, I hope that once you have had your court date, that you could come back and sort of follow up and tell us a little bit more, you know, about what has happened. And we have about 2 minutes left, so please quickly again, give us your website address again.
Well, it's www.armypsyop.wix.com/Scott Bennett. And the book is Shell Game, S-E-H-E-L-L. And you can Google it, Shell Game. And if I'm alive and kicking, which I anticipate, but, you know, God's in charge, if I'm alive, I will come back and I will report and help and happy to answer any questions I can. But we make no mistake, we're in a war with the dark powers and principalities of lies and corruption that have an agenda that until you have been exposed to it, you really don't understand the wickedness in high places that has been orchestrating a lot of this stuff. And I didn't discover it until after, you know, God kind of led me through this this tunnel. And I came out the other side a wiser man.
Well, Scott, you know, again, thank you so much for being on and take care of yourself and, you know, Godspeed with you. And we hope to have you back soon. And we'll be talking to you soon, Scott.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you. Have a great night. So there you have it, a lot of information that, you know, to digest tonight. We're going to have a great guest next week. We're going to talk more about ISIS, and you're going to hear an earful again. So hopefully you'll be back to join us next week. We have a best-selling author with us to talk further about, like I said, ISIS and what's going on in the Middle East. We do need to be informed, and we need to know all this. So until next week, God bless you all. Have a great week. Thank you for joining us tonight, and take care.